The shift in communication can be very annoying, and hearing older generations bemoan it, you can easily romanticize the past. But I was at a wedding recently where I saw that there is a beautiful side to things as well. During the toasts, a bridesmaid shared some early emails that the bride had sent her years ago when she was first pursuing the groom, who was painfully oblivious to her advances. The initial emails showed her being sad that the guy didn't love her back and worried that she should give up. Her friend even said that she should hang it up because she was becoming that girl. But she kept on, and months later, there was an email saying that she was madly in love. Hearing those emails was remarkable, and it made me realize that digital technology gives all of us the chance to have this very unique record of our romantic relationships. On our one-year anniversary, my girlfriend gave me a huge book that compiled the entire history of our text messages from the first year of our relationship. It was hilarious to look back on all the things we said. For certain messages, she wrote out what was going on in her mind, and it was amazing. Since I've done this to hundreds of people, I will finally do it to myself. Let's look at my exchanges. To set the scene, I got her number at a barbecue in Brooklyn, and we talked about getting ramen later that week. "Hey, it's Aziz. Call me back." This is in regards to delicious Tsukemon-style ramen, sent on July 15th, 2:03 p.m. "Delicious Tsukemon ramen equals Minka on 5th between A and B. What's your sketch like?" Received on July 15th, 3:14 p.m. "I can maybe go for din-din tonight before stand-up obligations, if that works." Sent on July 15th, 5:13 p.m. Okay, so the first message was sent by me after I called and sent the text in lieu of a voicemail. My girlfriend didn't call me back, though. She texted. In the book she gave me, she reveals that at the time, she didn't realize that I'd asked her to call. After realizing her mistake, she freaked out and was worried that by texting instead of calling, she would come off looking too nervous or scared. "I can't tonight. Having a going-away dinner for one of the milk bar gals. I could do tomorrow or Wednesday. Also, never seen you do stand-up. Definitely want to get down on that. Curious, on a scale of 1 to 10, how funny are you?" Received July 15th, 5:20 p.m. Note, I wait a day here and send my next message. "Hey, let's do Minka tonight at 8:15 and we'll go to Comedy Cellar after and I'll drop in. Cool? My skill on a scale of 1 to 10? Let's just say I'm kind of like the hokey pokey cookie of stand-up comedy." Sent July 16th, 10:13 a.m. "Sweet! The hokey pokey is definitely Milk Bar's funniest cookie. See you at Minka." Received July 16th, 11:09 a.m. As noted, I didn't respond to her next message until the next day at 10:13 a.m. I definitely intentionally waited so as not to come off as overeager. And I specifically remember running a draft by a friend and rewriting it several times before sending it off. The Hokey Pokey cookie is a reference to a cookie that her restaurant made, one that she knew I loved. Today, I know for a fact that my waiting did indeed cause some uneasiness. She told me that she felt I must have somehow been offended by the "how funny are you" comment. But the same night she was waiting, she got word that I'd asked a friend of hers if she was in fact single. So she knew all was well. Still, the waiting did have an effect. She told me she was really excited when I wrote back the next morning. The early messages are interesting to look back on because they reveal so much about our mindsets at the time. Both of us were anxious about the text we were crafting, but we were oblivious to the fact that we were in the same boat. As things progressed in the relationship, and in our messages, she talked about how much it meant to her when I sent some early loving texts saying that I missed her or was thinking about her. When I read them, it took me back through all the excitement and fun we'd had during those times. So although these new tools may cause us all stress and angst in the early parts of a relationship, the same technology has also given us all a new place to store, remember, and share our love for each other. And I'm glad we have it. Don't think of online dating as dating. Think of it as an online introduction service. Online dating has probably been the single biggest game changer in the hunt for your soulmate. Remember, between 2005 and 2012, one-third of all the couples who got married in the United States met on the Internet. By the time this book is out, that number undoubtedly will be higher, and some new app or site will make Tinder or whatever is currently popular seem outdated. Many online daters we spoke with were having success, but many were also frustrated and fed up with the scene altogether. However, most of the ones who were fed up seemed to be spending more time in front of their screens than in front of their dates in real life. Online dating works best as a forum where you can meet people whom you'd never otherwise be able to meet. It's the ultimate way to expand the search beyond the neighborhood. The key is to get off the screen and meet these people. Don't spend your nights in endless exchanges with strangers. Communicate with people you have some chance of liking. Then, After a few messages, enough to figure out if there's something really, really wrong with them, just ask them out. After a certain point, if you're still trading endless back and forth messages online, you're just wasting time. Have faith in your ability to size someone up in person. The allure of online dating and its vast supply of potential dates can make staying in and clicking through profiles in your pajamas seem like a better option than heading out to a crowded bar or restaurant. But let's not forget another great source of potential mates, the real world. Remember Arpan, the dude who was so burned out on online dating? We contacted him about a year after the focus groups to see whether he was still meeting women online and taking them to the bowling alley, just for drinks, of course. We were delighted to hear that his whole love life had taken a turn for the better. He had met someone special and had been dating her for a few months, and he seemed genuinely happy, with way more energy than he had shown that sad Sunday morning with us. Arpan met his new lady in real life, but he credited his online dating experiences with helping him meet new people. He explained that all those unanswered messages had reduced his fear of rejection and made him less apprehensive about approaching women. He met his girlfriend at a bar after seeing her at a distance and working up the courage to introduce himself. I walked towards her group, said hello to all her friends, looked this girl straight in the eye and said, "I saw you from across the room and I just had to say hello." It was heartwarming to learn that Arpan had turned things around since we'd first met him, and it was fascinating to hear him trace his success in real-world romance to the things he learned while dating online. With so many romantic options, instead of trying to explore them all, make sure you properly invest in people and give them a fair chance before moving on to the next one. We have so many options and we're horrible at analyzing them. We go on boring dates and we're quick to move on to the next person. Stack the deck in your favor. Go on interesting dates. Follow the monster truck rally theory and do things that are going to help you experience what it's really like to be with this person. Don't just stare at each other across the table while sipping a beverage and making the same small talk you've made 1,000 times about siblings, hometowns, and where you went to college. Also, have faith in people. A person may just seem okay, but if you really invest time in the relationship, maybe they'll be greater than you assume. Think about it in terms of the music of rapper Flo Rida. When you hear his latest song, at first you think, "God damn it, Flo Rida. You're just doing the same thing again, song after song. This song is nothing special at all." And by the 10th time you hear it, you're like, "Flo, you've done it again! This is a hit, baby!" In a sense, we are all like a Flo Rida song. The more time you spend with us, the more you see how special we are. Social scientists refer to this as the Flo Rida theory of acquired likability through repetition. The other thing that has stuck with me is how important it is to analyze options in the real world, not just on the screen. When I was finishing up this book, I got contacted by a woman who'd been in the audience of a stand-up show I did in Michigan in September 2013. During the show, I was discussing texting and asked if anyone had met someone recently and had been in a back and forth. This woman who was sitting in the front raised her hand, and I invited her to come up to the front of the stage and share her experience. She told me she'd met the guy about a week earlier and had been messaging back and forth. She'd met him through friends of friends at a bonfire. He lived in her apartment complex. And after meeting her, he left her a note on her door that said, "Dinner tomorrow," and his apartment number. She wrote, "I'm busy," on the note, and put it back on front of his door. He then placed the note back on her door and wrote, "You're busy tonight? How about Monday, Wednesday, or Friday?" She then took the conversation to Facebook and sent him a message that said, "Hi, Ron, I assume it's you, not Sarah, sending me notes. I think the idea of dinner is great, but things are kind of hectic right now, in addition to a huge voice project that I'm working on all day. Every day for the next 2 weeks, my brother-in-law's grandma won't be living much longer, and I'm on call to babysit my niece and nephew if my sister has to be with her husband's family. Can I get back to you when things settle down? Thanks." He responded, "No worries. Family always comes first." As always, you can tell so much by these messages. Her extended list of excuses, including that really intense one about the dying grandma, did not bode well for this would-be suitor. I asked the audience to clap if they thought she actually liked this guy and would go out with him when things settled down. There was a smattering of claps. When I asked if people thought she didn't like him and they would never go out, there was massive applause. The audience knew this lady wasn't ready to go out with this guy. After hearing this, she said, "Well, I've seen him around since, and he's not terrible," and that she would maybe go out with him. It was the last I heard of this situation. Then, in September 2014, a year later, the woman was able to get in contact with me. She said that after we read through the messages, she realized she should give him a second chance. They started dating, and now, a year later, they were getting married! It was pretty insane to hear. And in the context of this book, I think it's an important story to remember. With all our new tools for connecting and communicating, there's still nothing more useful than actually spending time with a person face to face. Often, when you're out in the single world meeting people, you meet someone you like, get their number, and put it right in your phone, transforming them into an option that lives in your device. Sometimes you and that option engage in some phone-based interaction and you meet up in person. But sometimes that exchange never happens. That potentially cool, exciting person dies there, buried in your phone. When I was actively dating, there was a woman I'd met in a bar. For whatever reason, our text conversation fizzled and we never met up after our initial meeting. We ran into each other at a mutual friend's party years later and really hit it off. I felt dumb. Why hadn't I ever followed up with this great person? After writing this book, I think I know why. It's probably because I was busy chasing other options. I didn't text her and left her to die in my phone. For me, the takeaway of these stories is that no matter how many options we seem to have on our screens, we should be careful not to lose track of the human beings behind them. We're better off spending quality time getting to know actual people than spending hours with our devices seeing who else is out there. Okay, well, I'm fucking done with my book. Yeah! Before we part, though, I want to say one more thing about our current romantic conundrums. These days, there are a lot of people out there saying that social media and all our new communications technologies are making it impossible for people to really connect with one another. There are an equal number of people saying that our new media makes things better than ever. By now, I hope it's clear that I don't buy either of these extreme arguments. Culture and technology have always shaken romance. When the plow came in and made women's labor value and the family unit drop, it was disruptive. When the car provided a means for people to travel and see people who lived farther away, that was disruptive too. Same with telegraphs, telephones, televisions, and whatever future inventions may come. Who knows? Maybe some woman is listening to this in the future and wondering, well, at least dudes weren't teleporting dicks to your house on a regular basis. This sounds great. History shows that we've continually adapted to these changes. No matter the obstacle, we keep finding love and romance. Now that I've finished this project, I have a much richer understanding of the new romantic landscape. The main thing I've learned from all this research is that we're all in it together. I hope you feel this way, too. I wish you and all the listeners the best of luck in modern romance. And by best of luck, I mean I hope that one day you'll meet someone amazing, text them a thoughtful message, take them to a monster truck rally, and then hopefully, at some point, after a bowl of delicious ramen, make love to them in a Jurassic Park-themed love hotel in Tokyo. All right. That's it, you lazy fuck. I'm done reading to you. That's it. Audiobook's over. What are you gonna do now? Go to a restaurant and have someone read the menu to you? Well, I hope you enjoyed that. That was fun. I need to do some credits here. This is Aziz Ansari. I've been your reader for the evening. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Modern Romance by Aziz Ansari with Eric Kleinenberg. This program was directed by Scott Sherritt, producer Dan Zitt, text copyright 2015 by Modern Romantics Corporation, production copyright 2015 Penguin Random House Audio, a member of Penguin Group USA LLC, Penguin Random House Company, all rights reserved. Ooh, you hear how fast I read all that shit? That was me, that was Aziz, I did that. They didn't like bring in like another guy who can read really fast to get all the credits, that was me, I just did that. If there's anyone else that has an audiobook and they just want me to read the credits really fast, you know, give me a shout. I'll come in. I'll lay it down. All right, well, I hope you enjoyed the book, and I do want to give a huge thanks to Scott and Dan and everyone who helped put this audiobook together. It was a lot of fun, and I know I made fun of you for not reading it, but this was a little bit of a different experience, and you know, you got something a little different here, and I hope you enjoyed it. So thanks for listening, and thanks for purchasing my audiobook. Goodbye.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.